Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with somebody that you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One.
It took me, like, I got off the phone, and it was like a mixture between some nervousness, some excitement, you know, a lifetime of hard work and dreams had been finally paid off. And it was like, I literally think I stood up and paced around my hotel room for like 5 minutes, kind of just feeling everything and just kind of taking it all in the moment.
And our guest this week is Brian O'Keefe, a St. Joseph's University alum. He was a star with the Hawks, and after battling his way through the minor leagues, made his major league debut this year with the Seattle Mariners, got his first big league hit. And Brian, thanks so much for the time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
So as we're recording this in early November, what is your focus as far as kind of decompressing from the season, looking ahead to the next season? Like, where are you as far as what your focus is these days?
Well, early in the off season, honestly, you know, it was a long year. It's been, you know, there was a lot of ups and downs prior to the debut. So taking some time to kind of relax, kind of let the body heal, kind of get back in the gym, kind of get that going. Luckily for me, me and my fiance were about to get married here and probably actually less than a month. So we got that. We're doing the house. So we got a lot of projects that's kind of keep my mind off of it and kind of just kind of give me some balance, just some everyday life. But as the off season starts rolling, it'll probably be when I get back from the honeymoon, it'll probably be right back to it. It'll probably be that's when I'll really start cranking it up baseball activity wise with hitting and throwing and catching and kind of get back into the full swing of things.
From a mental standpoint, how long does it take you to completely kind of process the previous season? And I mean, this season's special because you got to the big leagues and everything. But overall, kind of go through, catalog everything, and kind of put it to the side. Is that something that lasts kind of the entire offseason? Or is it just like a week or so, and then you've kind of cleaned the plate?
I think it's kind of different each offseason. I think depending on how the year's gone and, you know, where you're at mentally by the end of it, I think that kind of plays a role in things. You know, my first couple offseasons, I really never did it. And then as I got a little bit older, I started to kind of come home. And that first week, I would just categorize everything, just put everything on paper, write it down, you know, the good, the bad, the ugly, and kind of go through it that way. And then what I wanted to work on for the offseason. And then as I've kind of gotten older, you know, even later into my career, I don't write as much as I used to, you know, in terms of like writing everything down. For me, I almost feel like I go through a checklist almost in the moment of like, oh, this is something that I need to work on for the offseason. It could be July. And I kind of have all these, little memory tabs for myself that, you know, these are things I want to work on or these are things I want to work on. But I really honestly haven't sat down and gone through the season yet. I think once I start baseball activities will probably be when I probably sit down right around, you know, December-ish, I would say. I probably sit down and really kind of dive into the season on certain things, you know, from the mental side to the physical side to the mechanical side, all that stuff. I'll probably go through in probably early December this year and, you know, start to get a general idea of what I want to do and the direction I want to take things for the offseason, baseball wise.
So mentioned off the top, you made your debut this year with the Mariners, got the first big league hit. If I read correctly, you got the call up with the Mariners. It was to replace a player who went on the paternity list. So how did you, with something like that, that they knew was coming, were you kind of given a heads up like, hey, we don't know, but this is something that could happen? Or do they not do that with you? They don't want to distract you, or, you know, and you just get let know that, hey, guess where you're going?
Well, it was funny is like, I think it was the second to last full series of the year. We were in Vegas. You know, we had kind of known for a while that it was going to be that Kurt was going to go on the paternity list or paternity leave. And my AAA manager, you know, as a journeyman catcher who played in the big leagues for a while, you know, he kind of just said, like, I think it's going to be you. You know, I don't know, but I think it's going to be you. And it was, they actually ended up calling Louis back up. And so I just kind of figured, all right, well, just another year, you know, good year, but, you know, didn't get to the big leagues. And then I was on the taxi squad, and it was the day we flew into Arizona and we had gotten in. I was in the hotel room. It was late at night. We had been there all day, and it was about 11:30, I think, on the West Coast time. And, you know, I was getting ready, you know, I was playing video games, kind of getting ready to go to bed to get ready for tomorrow or the next day. And our farm director calls me, and I'm like, what is he calling me about? You know, he's either, hey, calling me to talk about next year or the possibilities of next year, or something else is going on. And it ended up being the latter. And when I found out, it was just kind of a crazy, I definitely didn't think I would react the way I did. You know, you play that scenario out in your head hundreds and hundreds of times as you're in the minor league. So when I finally did get that call, I mean, I thought once Louis went back up, I didn't think I was going to go up this past year. And then obviously things can change very quickly, and you saw it happen.
You mentioned you didn't react the way you thought. What was your reaction? Was it more disbelief, or just you couldn't process it in the moment, or what was that reaction?
It was weird. I'm somebody that I usually have words for just about every situation. And I felt like I almost felt like I blew him off, because I really didn't know what to say to him. I just kind of said, thank you, you know, and kind of move forward. It took me, like, I got off the phone and it was like a mixture between some nervousness, some excitement, a lifetime of hard work and dreams had been finally paid off. And it was like, I literally think I stood up and paced around my hotel room for like 5 minutes, kind of just feeling everything and just kind of taking it all in the moment. And I always thought the first call I would ever make would be to my dad, but it was 11:30. So I knew there, you know, it's what, 2:30 back home at this point. So my brother happened to be out in Arizona he was on a golf trip with his buddies. And I'm like, I bet you he's still up. So I called him, doesn't answer. Call him again, doesn't answer. Text him, I was like, hey, you need to call me. So then I was finally at that point where it's like, all right, I'm ready to call my dad. So I called my dad and they didn't answer. And I called him again. Obviously, he was half asleep. And I barely got the words out, I think, before that's when it all hit me, was when I was able, like when I said that to him over the phone, you know, I'm getting emotional just thinking about it right now. It was just everything came out, because he's seen everything. You know, a lot of people, you know, throughout the course of the journey, you know, you see what happens on the field, you see, you know, what you're doing during the games and things like that. But behind the scenes, you know, the mental side of it, the frustrations, the disappointments, all the negative stuff that, you know, you have to continue to go through and fight through to play the game as long as you want to, you know, he's always been there and he's seen it up close. And he's been to Peoria, Illinois a bunch of times with my mom. He's been to the middle of nowhere to come see me play. So, you know, my parents were, to be able to tell them over the phone was so, so cool. And it was so, I didn't have words to express what that meant to me and probably them in that moment.
So you get the call, and this is September 30th is the day that you are activated. And oh, by the way, so you happen to be there when the Mariners clinched their first playoff berth in more than two decades. The next day, you get your first big league hit. I'm trying to process what that 48 hours must have been like to just experience kind of sheer joy and elation on multiple levels, multiple times. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, it was a crazy 48 hours to say the least. It was, I don't want to say that I didn't feel part of the team, because that is the furthest thing from it. You know, I got in the clubhouse and a lot of those guys I've played with or have known over the course, gotten to know really well over the course of the years, you know, they made me feel immediately like I was part of that team. And for me to be there when we clinched was so cool, so special. I mean, if you think about it, you know, just from my own journey, I spent 9 of those years in the minor leagues, you know, almost not a full half, but, you know, damn near close to the time half the time the Mariners hadn't been in the playoffs. So for it to be my first day in the big leagues and for it to be the first time in 21 years that the Mariners clinched, it was kind of like this. I don't know if you could think of a more perfect kind of fairy tale movie type situation for myself. And those guys made me feel like an absolutely like I had been there from the first series in Minnesota. So it was really, really cool that first night. And I tried to stay ready. You know, I knew there was a possibility, you know, late in the game, if they needed something off the bench, you know, I was preparing as if I was going to play all day. And so I was into it. You know, I was into the game. I was obviously into the moment. And then when Cal hit the walk-off, I mean, I'm pretty sure there's a cool picture of me, like the first one out of the dugout. I mean, it is hit and I am outside the dugout, hands up. And then to turn around, you know, I enjoyed the heck out of it. You know, the celebration in the clubhouse and kind of tried to take it all in. I've been in the game for a long time, so I know what it's, you know, and I've been lucky enough to be on two teams that have won championships. So I know what it's like to win. I played in the playoffs several times throughout my time in the minor leagues, and I know what it takes to win. So I kind of tried to take a step back and let them enjoy their moment, because they had been the ones that had worked their tails off all year to get to that point. And I kind of just tried to take everything in and just kind of look around. And, you know, I was like, man, I really want to be a part of this next year, much more than I am right now. And I knew there was a possibility just because of how where Cal was at physically. You know, Scott had told me, hey, there's another lefty going tomorrow. There's a good chance, you know, you could be in the lineup tomorrow. And so when we clinched, I knew there was a really good possibility that I was going to be in the lineup, or a chance that I would get some time. And when the lineup came out, I remember me and my fiance had just gotten back from breakfast with my parents, and my brother was flying in for that, because he wasn't able to get a flight on that Friday. So he said he was going to fly in first thing on Saturday. So we had breakfast, and I remember the lineup coming out, and I was like, holy cow, like, I'm starting the big leagues. And I was, it was really cool. You know, my parents were in the hotel, and, you know, I was starting to kind of get to the point. I mean, it was an early game. It was a 1 o'clock game. So, you know, I was kind of getting ready, but I FaceTimed my dad and was able to tell him that I was starting in the big leagues, which was really, really cool. So I normally, from the hotel where they put you up, I normally, you know, ride scooters over to the ballpark. But it was one of those things where I didn't want to miss anything, and I wanted to enjoy everything. So I decided to walk. I remember just walking, and the vendors were already out and the hot dogs were going, and, you know, you could see people already kind of, you know, there's still buzz around the ballpark, you know, so it was really cool. And just to kind of walk through all that and feel all that energy was really cool walking in. And got in there and kind of went through my routine to get ready. And then obviously went out and played. And when I got that first big league hit, I grew up, you know, watching the Yankees win World Series in the late 90s and understanding what a crazy fan base that was. I didn't know Seattle fans were the way they were. And for them to give me a standing ovation, I think it was a sold out crowd of 47,000 people to give me a standing ovation for my first big league hit. It was, like I said, it was almost something out of a movie. It was so surreal. It was so cool. So, you know, I tried so hard not react, but just kind of take it all in and just be in that moment. And It was surreal. It was really cool. My whole family was there. My high school coach that I played for was there. My fiance was there. So her mom flew out. So it was really special for a lot of reasons. And you know, you could see the excitement just from the guys in the dugout, how excited they were for me. So it was a really, really crazy, fun, eventful 48 hours for sure.
The hit comes off, I think it was bottom five off J.P. Sears' single to left field. It's your second at bat. Do you remember the mindset as you're digging in into the box?
Yeah. So I was, after the first at bat, we had faced Sears and I believe he got traded in the Montas deal with the Yankees. I think he came over with Wallachuk, and we had seen both those guys at home in Tacoma earlier that year. And the funny thing was, is I don't think I faced either one of those guys. I think it was the 2 days of the week that I was off. It was both those guys through. So, but I had seen them and I kind of knew what we were, what I was going to face. After the first at bat, he threw me a lot of, I think he threw me three sliders my first at bat. I think he threw me three sliders and maybe one fastball. And I was like, you know, I was kind of talking to our minor league hitting coordinator who had been up there for a while. I was talking to him in the dugout. It wasn't even really a conversation. It was just me more talking out loud to him. And I was like, you know, he threw me a lot of sliders. You know, I'm going to maybe I should spin and just look for that slider. And I was like, you know what? No, I told myself before the day started, I'm going to stay on the fastball. I'm going to stay on the fastball. I'm going to stay on the fastball. So I kind of talked myself in and out of that very quickly. And when I walked up, it was just like, hey, you know, same approach, you know, that I've had my whole, the last two seasons of trying to stick it to center. And he threw me an O changeup, and it was, you know, because I was on the fastball, I had enough length out in front to kind of just hit a good ball to left, and it got down. I knew when I hit it, it was a hit. It was kind of surreal when all that stuff happened, but I remember just kind of stepping in the box. And the most calm I was throughout the entire day was actually in the box. The nerves were more sitting in the dugout waiting to go back up to the plate or whatever. So that was probably the most nervous I was sitting in the dugout. But once I got in the box, everything just kind of slowed down. And, you know, I think you make it out to this, oh, it's going to be this, it's going to be that, it's going to be whatever. But I think sometimes we make it to be way worse or way better in our minds. And I think I was honestly more nervous in the dugout because, again, it was just my mind kind of playing tricks on me. And when I got in the box, everything had slowed down. I had done this so many times from the time I was at St. Joe's through my course of the minor leagues all the way up to the big league. So I had done it so many times and it was very natural and very easy.
So let's talk a little bit about growing up. Was baseball number one for you, like even as a kid?
Yeah, baseball was always... Maybe for the briefest of times, it might have been hockey, but it was always baseball. My mom, I think, always thought I was going to play hockey as I continued forward. But, you know, as I started getting older, I just loved baseball. I just loved everything about it. I loved everything that I worked at it from the time. I mean, I got lucky. My parents kind of taught me the value of hard work at a young age. And, you know, it was something that I sacrificed a ton for. I mean, I remember missing high school dances. I remember missing homecomings. I remember missing friends getting together in the summertime to hit the garage or to go to a camp at JMU or a camp at Richmond. Yeah, I would say for me, baseball was probably, especially when I got into high school, I stopped playing hockey. My last year of hockey was, I think, eighth grade. And from the time I was in high school to obviously still now, it was baseball year round.
Always a catcher?
Yeah, from the age of probably, I would probably like say six, I started catching. And so I've been doing it for a long time.
How much of it growing up was you enjoyed it and how much of it was you were good at it? Was there a push-pull with that or was it all in the same direction?
Honestly, for me, it was the simplest thing was I love, and I still am this way, like in all aspects of my life, I like to have control and I like to be involved. And I loved being involved in every single play as a catcher. I loved that part of it. I loved what went into it, the ability to control a game back there. You know, every so often, don't get me wrong, I enjoy playing in the outfield or playing shortstop every so often just because, you know, you watch Derek Jeter do it or Bernie Williams. I always wore 51. So growing up, so, you know, I was a big Bernie guy. So every so often when I got to go out there, it was kind of cool. But, you know, that got old quick. You know, you can be out there for four innings and not get a ball hit to you. So that kind of got old kind of quick. So it was just one of those things that I just really enjoyed. I was really good at it and I really enjoyed just being involved in everything. So
we need to take a break. We will have more with Brian O'Keefe right after this. This is One-on-One.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You open the fridge, there's nothing there. So what's it gonna be? Greasy pizza? Sad drive-through burgers? Dish by Blue Apron is for nights like that. These are the pre-made meals of your dreams. at least 20 grams of protein, no artificial flavors or colors, no chopping, no cleanup, no guilt. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back on One-on-One, continuing our conversation with former St. Joseph's University star catcher Brian O'Keefe, now a member of the Seattle Mariners. Now, you grew up in Albany. How does a kid from Albany end up at St. Joseph's University? What was the road that brought you to Hawk Hill?
The short version is that the program I played for my junior and senior summers was the South Troy Dodgers. And if you look at the history of the guys that have come out of there, just from the area, you have Joe Mahoney, Tommy Canley, Jeff Hoffman, myself. I'm trying to think of who else played up there. Tom Murphy played for them. Casper Wells played for them. There was just so many guys in the area that we were just really, we found really good talent up there. And we had a good run for years. They still produce a ton of guys that go play in Division I and get drafted. Through them, they started kind of the talks with, they helped me kind of reach out to Richmond. And that's where I honestly thought I was going to probably end up with Coach Wheeler, was at Richmond at the time. And I thought it was going to be, Richmond was probably my number one school. And my high school coach, Dave Fields, coach with Fritz at Army. And on a whim, that, you know, he said, you know, it's been some time, we got to catch up, but I don't know why this kid is still looking for a home, like he should play somewhere in college. I don't know if you guys have any money or a need for a catcher in the class. And Fritz was like, absolutely. You know, the funny thing is, we are looking for a catcher in that class and we do have money left over. He said, you know, give me a couple of days and I'll reach back out. So, you know, I think Fritz did his homework. He called probably, I know he talked to a couple of scouts that had seen me work out for them in high school and a couple of things like that. So within, I think it was in February, right before winter break came back. I think it was like the last week before winter break ended. Fritz had me and my mom drive down for the day to Hawk Hill. And there's a couple guys working out. I remember AJ was there and Kemp was the other guy who was there. And they spent the day with us. And Fritz, without ever seeing me play, without ever watching me do anything, offered me a scholarship to come to St. Joe's. And again, it was, you know, I wanted to go to Richmond and I wanted to be there. And after I kind of sat down, and I remember we were at a pizza place. It was me and my dad and my two high school coaches, and we were talking about it. And, you know, when you said it out loud, you know, this guy is never seen me play and is willing to take an opportunity on me. I mean, like, when you said it out loud, I was like, this is a no-brainer. It was the best decision I ever made. So I ended up coming to Hawk Hill, and it was the absolute best decision I ever made.
And Fritz's head coach, Fritz Hamburg, who is an alum of this pod, it should be noted. He is, I mean, he has a great program, but specifically pitchers and catchers that come through the St. Joe's program, everybody gets better. If you look at kind of the pipeline of kids that have gone into pro ball, gotten to the big leagues, pitchers and catchers, what is it about what Fritz, the work he does that is so impactful on you as a player, but also you as a catcher?
I think in general, I think for, you know, he has a tremendous mind for that position. I mean, he was a catcher. He called for in the Phillies organization for a little bit, and he's been around pitchers for my whole time. He was there. He was around the pitchers, and he's been doing it for a long time. So I think if you just look at a baseball mind like that, his ability to communicate and push guys is very, very good. I think that what he can, you know, his way, he can be hard, and he was hard on me in a good way, you know. And I think part of it is like we joke around now is that we were so similar as people and as catchers that we, me and him, not in a bad way, but we butted heads. And I think it was a way, like, those are the best types of relationships, I think, in terms of especially like coaches and players. I don't want you to be my best friend, but at the same time, I'm going to need you to put an arm around me every once in a while. And he has a great feel of when to do it and how to do it. And the way, you know, I can tell you the amount of times that I just sat in the office in between classes or before practice, and we would just talk baseball. You know, what about this? What do you see here? What are your thoughts on this sequence? What do you think? If this guy's throwing this pitch, what do you think? You know, just having those conversations with him, it helped me grow as a player. It helped me grow as a person. It helped me grow as a leader. That was probably one of the biggest things that he helped me with, you know, during my time at St. Joe's. I remember we had a difference of opinion on something, and we got into it pretty good. And I remember we had a game on Saturday. And now, mind you, me and Fritz, if there was a day we didn't talk, something was probably wrong. I mean, that was the type of relationship we had. Whether it was simply me popping into the office, him shooting me a text, you know, whatever it was, you know, we talked all the time. And I think the difference of opinion happened on a Wednesday, I think. And we didn't have practice on Thursday. This is in the fall of my junior year. And on Friday, I remember we didn't really, I don't think there was many words said between us. And I remember sending him a text as soon as practice was over. It was probably, God, 5:40, 6 o'clock at night. And I remember asking him, I said, what time will you be there tomorrow? And he goes, I'll be there. I think he said like 6:45. And I was like, perfect. I'll see you there at 6:15. And I remember pulling up to the clubhouse. It was about 6 a.m. And I just sat there and waited. And he walked in, and it was one of those things where it just only strengthened our relationship and the ability to be able to, like, you know, express myself and how I was feeling. And at the same time, being able to hear him and what he had to say for me as a player. Yeah, some of those things are hard to hear at times, but they need to be heard. And you need to find ways to grow and get better from those. And I remember that conversation, especially to this day. You know, I think the exact quote was, how do you expect to lead this team when you don't do half the things you're asking other guys to do? And it kind of hit me where I was like, wow, that really kind of makes sense. Like, if I want to be a leader on this team, which is something that I wanted from the day I walked in those doors, was to be a leader on that team. I completely changed how I went about doing things. And it wasn't even so much on the baseball field. It was like little things. It was, now, instead of asking young guys to take the laundry down, I started doing it, or we had the upperclassmen do it. If I was asking a guy to do something, I had to be damn sure ready to make sure that I was willing to do it too. And I think just in general, I think, you know, back to your original question, I think Fritz is just really, really good. I mean, he came from Army. He knows how to push guys. And I think he knows how to get the most out of guys. And I think you see it now, especially. I mean, look at the line of catchers that we've had come out of there. We've had Dave Valcente was before me. And then it was myself. And then it was Dion. And then it was Andrew. You know, he had a run of almost 16 years of guys at the helm behind the plate of that are professionals, or, you know, played professional baseball at some point or another behind the plate. I mean, that speaks to how he sees kids in high school, to how he develops them all the way through. And then on the pitching side, I mean, we've had Jordan Carter got drafted, Jimmy Yacobonis got drafted. He's pitched and still pitches in the big leagues. You know, you had AJ Holland and you had Kemp get drafted as pitchers. You've had, there's another guy there now. We were actually just talking about an outfielder that's probably going to get drafted at some point. You know, you look at it from a small mid-major school who plays in the A-10 from Philly. Philly's not known for baseball, you know, not more than basketball. Philly's been known as a basketball city. And, you know, I think you're starting to really see, like, what he's capable of doing and the type of talent that he can bring in there.
When did you – every kid dreams about getting drafted and playing pro ball. But along your journey, when does it go from, wow, that would be really cool, to, I think I've got a legitimate shot at this if I work hard and the cards fall my way? Was there an aha, or was it just kind of a gradual, one thing led to another, and this scouts, and now they're calling me, and now I'm on these lists of guys that are going to get drafted? Like, what do you remember kind of how it came together?
I had known since I was in high school, actually probably before high school, that this was what I wanted to do. I've known for a long time this was what I wanted to do, and everything in my life revolved around that. You know, I wanted to play professional baseball. I wanted to be drafted. And I came in with the mindset of, I fully intended to be there for 3 years and then leave to the draft. And you know, I got a couple texts from guys, whether it was Kyle Mullen texted me and or Quinn Renner, you know, Anthony Cirillo, some of those guys that hosted me on my official visit. And they were like, we're sitting here laughing because you told us this when you were in high school that you were going to do this. And then there was another instance that, you know, when our field got built, my first fall was over at Campbell. And but when we came home after that, our spring trip and our field was done, I'll never forget this. And because nobody there will let me forget it. But, you know, I walked out on the field and we were in stretch and I go, man, this is going to be a really nice place to play for 3 years. And everybody was like, are you effing kidding me? And I was dead serious. And it was one of those things where like, it just never stopped for me. Like that was my mindset. You know, when I was done with the day, if I didn't feel good, there was nights that I'd go up to the cage in the pool and hit for 2-3 hours with Greg Kumpel until it was 11:30, 12 o'clock at night. You know, there was days where I would tell the rest of the guys in the freshman class, hey, let's go hit. No, I don't want to. Well, somebody's going to come hit with me because I need somebody to flip. So, you know, getting guys to do that or, you know, bringing guys along. It was just one of those things that I had known from the time I was really little that it was what I wanted to do. And I was willing to do anything to get there. And, you know, I just happened to be lucky enough. And as it went, I think probably early, the scouts were, I think the biggest knock probably on me coming out was my catching was ahead of my hitting. The whole question was, oh, is he going to hit? Is he going to hit? Is he going to hit? And I kind of put those to sleep early in my junior year. The first probably month and a half, 2 months of the season, there was no more questions on whether or not I could hit. And I knew pretty much about a month into the season, there was no chance I was probably coming back.
You get drafted by the Cardinals, I think 7th round in 2014. I'm curious, how long did it take before being a pro baseball player became a grind? And I don't mean that in a negative way, but that you really started to feel the 6-hour bus ride to El Paso or wherever, or 5 games in 3 nights, and then 8-hour bus ride to play a doubleheader the next day. I might be exaggerating a little bit, but I mean, how long did it take before the kind of the reality of what it is to be a pro baseball player, minor league baseball player, kind of smacked you in the face?
Pretty quick. I got spoiled a little bit being in state college my first year. You know, they treated us phenomenally from the clubhouse to the clubhouse staff to our food. You know, I got spoiled my first year, but I started realizing it very quickly, you know, when we would leave home and you go play in Batavia, New York, you go play in Mahoning Valley, you go play in Jamestown, you know, you go play in some of these places and they're just dumps and you're eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. You're eating the deli meats that look like they're rubber. You know, you kind of see these things and you're like, this is what it is. And, you know, now mind you, it's come so far from that. Now, you know, guys don't have, you know, you're starting to see teams put more time and energy into nutrition and, you know, what guys are eating and stuff like that. But yeah, it's, you know, it can be tough at times. I mean, you're away from, you know, your family. For some of the guys, it's their first time. You got high school guys. You got guys that are a little bit older. You got, like you said, you got a bus ride from state college. I remember we had one trip. We were up in Staten Island and we finished the game driving home. It's late. It's probably 1 or 2 in the morning. One of the guys has an emergency. We have to make a detour, drop him off at the hospital, get back. You know, the bus keeps going. I think we got into state college. We got back at probably 9:30, 10 in the morning. And then guess what? We turn around and we play at 7 o'clock that night. So, I mean, you go home, you try and sleep for a few hours and you're right back to it. But I think you learn very, very quickly, at least I did, that it's a business. And it is, yeah, those times are going to happen. And yeah, it could be tough for guys, but you know, at the end of the day, we have to go out and play and we have to go out and produce. And if you don't, they'll go find the next guy that does it. And that's the beauty and the curse of the business is it's a cutthroat business. And it is what have you done for me lately type of business. And, you know, guys, they give guys time to develop. You know, look at myself. I mean, there's been probably multiple times that I could have probably been out of the game and I've been able to extend my career for as long as I have. But yeah, it definitely can be a grind in certain areas. I think the toughest part is probably the mental side of things, because in the moment, you feel like, you know, you went 0-for-4 and then you got a 6-hour or 9-hour bus ride and you just sit on that for hours. And, you know, that can take a toll on guys. I think the mental side of things, you're seeing more and more guys deal with that than the physical, the grind. Cause, you know, we can get ready, you know, physically, you know what you're doing. I think it's the mental part to get yourself to a place where you're ready to play every single night, and not only play, but I mean, you look across baseball, whether you're in short season or the big leagues, everybody's throwing 95 plus now. Everybody has nasty breaking balls. And if you're not mentally in a place that you're ready to go play and compete, even if you're not at 100%, you know, there's plenty of games that you take the field. You're, you know, you're 85%, you're tired. You're, you know, you've played 12 of 13, you know, your bat's maybe a little slow. You're in July. It's the Florida State League. It's been 100 degrees every day. It definitely can be tough, but to be able to get yourself to a place where, I heard a manager say one time, it was great. He's like, I don't care what you guys have. Give me 100% of whatever you have that night and I'm okay. You know? So it's one of those things where mentally, I think if you can get yourself to a place where you're ready to go play, you'll be all right. But mentally, I think it's more of a grind than the physical, all the other stuff that goes into it.
You had a lot of success in the minors. You made steady progress up the ladder, but you don't break through. You know, we mentioned drafted in 2014, debut in 2022. Were there moments where you were real with yourself? Like, maybe it's not going to happen. Maybe this is, you know, just for whatever reason, circumstance, dumb luck, went 0-for-4 in front of the wrong person on the wrong day, whatever. Did you have those moments, or did you always think that if I just keep pressing, something's going
to
give?
I still have those moments to this day. I think if anyone says they don't have those moments, I think they're lying. I think it's very normal to feel that. I think in the moment, an 0-for-4 in June feels like it could be the end of the world. Whereas it's one day. And I think that in the moment, you're so attached to what happened that it's hard to let go. It's hard to move on. It's hard to accept. And I think that's probably the hardest thing. I think there was times this year where I was like, this might be it. This is it. But you gotta, you know, I never, when those times happen, I think, you know, as I've gotten older, I've done a lot of different things through meditation, breath work, more mental things in training than I've ever done. And for me, it's like you get to those moments. And I remember this year, there was a moment where I was having those same feelings. It was like, you know, this is never going to happen. I'm not playing well. I'm not hitting well. You know, this might be it for me, you know, blah, blah, blah. The list goes on. And I remember sitting there and I did some meditation and before the game. And it was one of those things where I remember saying to myself, you know what, if this is it, I was like, I'm going to go out and enjoy the hell out of these last 2 months and play the game the way I want to play. So when it is done, I never want to feel like the game owes me anything, because the game has given me so much and has blessed me with incredible friendships, incredible life lessons, journeys. I've been all across the country to play this beautiful game. I've come across some of the best people I've ever met through this game. You know, this game owes me nothing. And that was kind of my mindset for, you know, the rest of the season. And it's hard to keep that mindset though, man. It's, you know, fast forward 2 weeks down the road and then you go through an 0-for-10 or an 0-for-12. And it's like, man, here we go again. But it was one of those things where I just kept telling myself, you know what, I'm going to find or try my hardest to find or play the game the way I want to play it. I want to enjoy the hell out of this and I want to enjoy it and just be attached to the moment and try not to worry about what's coming tomorrow or what happened last night. I think that's the hardest thing for guys. You know, I learned that lesson when I was younger going through the minor leagues. It's like I was so attached to what happened the night before and I was so worried about what was going to happen tomorrow that the game would come and go and I would be like, I just did the same thing I did last night. And then it was like a snowball effect. And I realized really quickly, like, the only thing I can control is the moment and be there and be present. And so, yeah, there was a plenty of times and there's still times where it feels like, you know, because you know what the crazy thing is like you get drafted and you're like, you're happy for a little bit and you're excited. And then, you know, what the next thing is, all right, I want to get to full season. And then you get to full season. And then guess what? You're happy for a little bit. It's like, I want to get to high A. You get to high A and it goes all the way up to the big leagues. And guess what? You get to the big leagues and you know what the next thing you go, your thought is like, you're really happy and having fun. And then it's, oh, I want to stay here for 10 years to make a boatload of money, have pension, all this stuff. And then if you're lucky enough to play there for 10 years, it's like, I want to be in the Hall of Fame. And then it's never ending. So for me, it's just, if you can stay attached to the moment, not worry about things that already happened or about to happen because they're completely out of your control, I think that's where I find I play my best baseball and truly just enjoy the game the most.
Brian O'Keefe, this was a ton of fun. Congratulations again. Thanks for the time.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And that will do it for this week's episode. Want to thank Brian O'Keefe, former St. Joseph's University baseball star, for being our guest this week. If you like this show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, want to help us out, leave a rating and a review. You can follow the show on Twitter at @1onepod. You can follow me on Twitter as well at @MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.